Thank you.
Thank you.
Calm down. I don't need you. There's no standing ovations necessary, so. I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for your patience with me last week, especially because I was a little bit under the weather, and I know that I was not speaking well or enunciating well. I didn't listen to it. I won't do that, but thank you for being back this evening. I still have a little bit of a frog in my throat, but it seems to be letting me croak along fine. So thank you for being here. I come into this program in November 30th, 1989, which was 12,124 days ago. I guess I know that because I looked at it today and went, oh, isn't that cool? So that's what it is. So I qualify under that particular criteria. Outside of that, my qualifications are that I drank way too much for way too long, and then they said, you can't do that anymore. So here I am. Thank you, and that's about it. Here I got a question for all of you before we get started, because sometime in this week I've eaten somewhere in the neighborhood of 450 cough drops. And you know the statement in the program, it says that our level of serenity is directly proportional to our level of acceptance, or words to that effect. I'm of the belief, and it's a question: is it possible that the level of usefulness of your cough syrup or your cough drops are how bad it really tastes? So that's it. So I had some really sweet ones, and they weren't worth a crap. So they take you off to Fisherman's Friend or something like that. Something that'll kill you. So thank you again. I'm glad to be here. It's an honor always to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a privilege to know all of you. So thank you for being here again. I do have a couple of things I wrote down tonight. There we go. Matter of fact, I wrote down the entire thing that was in the big book. Took me half a page. I'm not going to read it to you. We're all familiar with the idea that we've gone through the first five steps already, and we're up, midway through the book, or close to it anyway. We're getting there, and we got two paragraphs for 6 and 7. Now, there's a lot of people talk about that. I think it's providential and probably a stroke of genius that they didn't write about it at the time. I don't know what the historical context of why there's only this short introductory part of that and says do this and do that and then say a prayer. Excuse me. My guess is that they didn't know what else to say at that time. I don't know what it is. There might be something, there might be a big backstory to this that I don't know or didn't find in any little research that I did. But, let's face it, when we go through the first two steps, we're up to page 40 something or 50 something before we're even getting on to anywhere near step 3. So you can see the importance that might, if you were going through this the very first time, you think, well, this can't really be all that important, can it? I mean, if we're at 6 and 7, you're only going to give me a literally less than a paragraph a piece on all the prayer's longer than anything else. Great prayer, like the prayer. Says amen at the end, by the way. Third step doesn't. I said that before. So I think they're connected that way. When I'm new in this program, and I get the idea that I want to go through these steps because I know that it helps people, and I want help, and I want to be able to help. But I get to 6 and 7, and it said, well, have a willingness, okay, and then humbly ask. Well, I don't know what any of that means. I don't. So the very first time I'm through the steps, and they said, take an hour afterwards, get in a quiet place, take an hour, do some meditation, read this part of the book, do the prayer, do it appropriately, hopefully that'll be how you move on to 8 and 9. Well, it's going to be that way no matter what, right? No matter what I do or how I say it, I have to go to 8 and 9 because I got to get on to the next one. My personal experience with this is that in all the times that I've been through this book and all the 12 and 12 meetings I've been to, and all the discussions and all the drop the rock times that I've read it or had it explained to me, it took me forever to figure out what it is that I wanted to get out of 6 and 7. And the God's honest truth is, willingness, real willingness, was what I needed to get and couldn't. And real humility is what I needed to get and I couldn't. Now, I could pray for those things, and I did. But still, I had this tendency to snatch back those things that I wanted to snatch back. And so it says in 6 and 7, listen, we've confronted in 5, you know, what it is was the exact nature of wrongs, and now we want the willingness to let go of them, and we want to humbly ask to have that removed. I wasn't sure that I knew how that was. And, you know, in the book it says, well, and I got to make a column of those things that these are the ones that you can let go. There's a grosser handicaps. And I thought, I don't know that I have minor handicaps. I really don't. Most of mine are pretty gross. I've been called gross lots of times. And so, I think I could define it, but intellectually define it, but not in the heart where it needs to get, right? It needs to get here, or it's not going to go anywhere. I don't get spiritual packaging through ego. I don't get it that way. It has to come the other way. It has to come through grace. It has to come through the idea that I have to be able to let go of things, actually and for real let go of things. So I don't think that I ever made a column up because that would have required work. So there's a real good chance I didn't make up any columns. But trust me, there were some of my grosser handicaps that I was not prepared to let go of. But I didn't know that as a fact. I would tell you, again, if you asked me, how are you doing on this? I'd say, well, I'm doing great. I'm just doing great. And so thank you for asking. But the God's honest truth is, I never really knew where I was at in this process. Because I couldn't get the feeling that I knew was supposed to come out of this. And the feeling that's supposed to come out of this is spiritual awakening, which is supposed to come out of all of them, right? But now we're in this gray area. Let's face it. You know, you get past 4 and 5, you think, these are pretty pragmatic steps. Make a list. You know, do this, do that. It's there. Do it. They put it in the book. Mr. Brown tells you how to do it. So, you know, everything to this point has kind of been spoon-fed to you. You're powerless. You know, you're trying to find power, and you know, and now they're going to give you this big gray chunk right in the middle that says, "Hey, now acquire willingness and humility." And by the way, if you can't do that, you cannot get sober and stay sober. Well, they don't say it quite like that. They put it in fancier words, but the truth of it is, it's a death sentence in there that says, come on, man, if you can't get here and stay here, you can't get the rest of it, and so let's make a real effort. What they don't say in this is that there's a time limit on when I'm going to get it, right? They wanted to get it the first time, but none of them ever got it the first time. Maybe Dr. Bob did. I say this all the time. You know, our founders, and I look across the room, and I know that there's nobody in here that doesn't want to be regarded as a Dr. Bob guy. And every single one of you is better, pretty close to Bill. And I don't even know you all that well. I mean, I do some of you. And some of you really do resemble Bill in a historical sense. And that's not applied to all of you. I'm taking big, wide chunks here, but let's face it. Humility was not something to come to Bill very quickly, and he was the first to say so. So, in that regard, I'm in fairly good company. I'm in really not in the company of Dr. Bob, but I'm in pretty good company early on with what our other founder, Bill Wilson, was about. And it's by his own writing that I know this, not because I'm making it up as I go along, which I frequently do. So, I always want to be Dr. Bob, and so that means I have to get to step 7, but I got to go through that willingness step first. I have to be able to say, well, all right, I'll lay down my weapons. For years, I went to a 12 and 12 meeting in Titusville, actually in Hightown. Great group of people, great group of people. And they had that meeting over there for a number of years. And I just happened on it with my wife, and we went to it regularly. So, you know, three of the weeks it was a step, and the fourth one was always a tradition, which nobody went to because nobody cared about the tradition. I mean, nobody, Kevin. None of us, you know, we were all working on recovery. We weren't working on the rest of it. So, and I would feel like when we did 6 and 7, I'd feel like I was getting closer to it. And the only way I know how to describe it is that years ago in a merry-go-round, they had the brass rings. You could grab the brass. I can't remember why, but you could. And there's, you know, there's a long story about it that I'm not going to tell. But that's the way it felt. I could never, ever, ever get to the ring. I'd get close enough, it's just whirling, and I can't get the idea of what this is really about. And trust me, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I'm not. But I can read and understand most of the time, and I can intellectually put things into order. Not this. Because this is greater than intellectual. This is greater than what I could have ever learned out of a book or from anybody actually talking to me. This is the God of my understanding directing me and giving me the assistance that I ask for, and then I receive, and then I keep. Because what I really want to do, early on especially, was I wanted everything to work out just the way that I wanted it right now. And then everybody that I knew would think, wow, that guy is really good at this. I don't know why I wanted that. It's all ego. Everything's ego-based or fear-based. And so when I got to this step in this big chunk of gray right in the middle of our program, I struggled. And I mean a lot. And for years. And not like it was going to send me out drinking. It wasn't. It was just something I wanted to know better. It's just something that I prayed to know better. So that 10, 11, and 12 was going to make more sense to me. You know, and 8 and 9, let's face it, 8 and 9 is pretty pragmatic too. I mean, promises are in there. All those things are in there. It's wonderful, great stories that can be told about 8 and 9. But honestly, pretty pragmatic, pretty much. I mean, even 10 in a lot of ways is do this or do that. This is how we do it. A lot more spirit involved. But by that time, you're at the 10th step, right? By that time, I'm thinking, well, I should know it. I was at the 6th and 7th step. And I wasn't. But I kept going because I didn't know any other way to do it. So, recently, I had the good fortune of becoming the DCM for District 32. And just by default, because it's post-pandemic and nobody really wants to do it. And I showed up at a meeting. And they said, well, why don't you do it because you got a bigger mouth than everybody else? And I said, that's fine, I get it, but everybody has to listen to me. I didn't say it. But the very first thing that I wanted to do, which I found out was the wrong thing to do because I didn't know any better, was that I wanted to have a day of sharing on steps 6 and 7. Because I think it's important that this go, you know, viral, man. Everybody should know about 6 and 7, especially me. That's what I wanted. I wanted to hear somebody else talk about it. I was promptly told by the guy that is a service sponsor, well, that's not what you do. That's not the way you do it. And if you knew this guy, you would tell him to, you know, back off. You know, for right now, it's none of your business. We'll do it differently next time. And we are. But man, what a powerful day that was. 75 people showed up. We did all the steps, but we did an emphasis on steps 6 and 7. And our speakers were just phenomenal. They were local people, people you all know, who just knocked it out of the park. And I thought, I just love this program. I just love the fact that people come in here and shared that much devotion to this part of it. And, you know, the 5 steps that they were done before and the 5 steps that were done after, the 4 steps that were done after, great. But those 2 in the middle were where we really wanted to go, and that's what we camped on, and that's what we learned the most about. At least I tried to. So here's the deal. Have I reached a time in my life where I can say with any certainty that I have the willingness to let go of these character defects, grosser and otherwise. Yes, absolutely. Do I immediately take some of it back? Unquestionably. Do I have to ask again? I do. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but there are times when I resist meditation and prayer. I don't know why. It's everything to me. It has given me absolutely everything in this program. I don't know why I would resist it, but I do. So what do? I pray for willingness, because I don't know what else to pray for at that point. If I don't, I can't just say, well, help me pray. I can, but help me be willing to do that. So that's, it come to that, it come that simply to me. Am I willing to let go? Well, to gain the kind of understanding, and I guess power, because that's what we're all looking for. We need to be able to lean into something. I had to be able to let go, right? So the paradox of surrender to win carries through to this step and into the next one. It's been through every one of them. And that's why I say powerlessness is the ribbon that runs through all of these steps. It is the thing that you have to look for at all times. I am powerless over the things that I have no control over, but I can ask for willingness and find a way to get better at what I do. And that means that I have to involve myself in not just one part of the program. I can't involve myself in just the steps. I actually have to know the traditions every once in a while, and for God's sakes, the concepts, because we all know how easy those things are to read and to understand. But it's important to me at this point to have a greater understanding about what it is that I want to accomplish in the balance of my life. And without willingness, I'm not going to get there. I'm just not. Now, there are things that I'm going to give up readily. I got to be honest with you. That has to do with age more than anything else. I'm tired. There's things I can't do anymore that I used to do, and I don't care. I'm not offended by the fact that people say, well, you're old. Well, I'm not as old as some people. I'm not a lot younger than most these days, but I don't care about those things which really don't have any kind of striking impact on my life of recovery. I care deeply about those things that do. I'm devoted to the idea that willingness is part of my life and has to be, has to continue. If only to take the thought of willingness, the intellectual part of that, and get it to where it needs to be. Am I willing to turn over these things to the God of my understanding? Am I willing to open up my heart to this? Am I willing to put my hand out and say, here's some help? Or, on the same level, please help. Because some of that happens too. I mean, I don't know about you, but for years I wouldn't ask for help. I would have to ask. I'd be bleeding before I asked for help. I didn't know anything and wouldn't ask for an explanation of anything. I used to say, well, I know that. I didn't know jack. I didn't know anything. And it kept me behind the eight ball. It kept me from knowing how to learn. And that's probably why it was difficult for me early on in this program. I couldn't learn. I didn't know how to. So, okay, we're at step six. We're going to be willing. And we're gonna get tough about this and say, if you're not willing, you're not going to get what you want. And that's all there is to it. That's the tough love that I want to give guys that come in the program with me. And I want to go through with them and say, this is not the easy step. This is the hard one. It just seems easy because it's only two paragraphs in the big book. And like I said, I think this is a stroke of genius or providential. There was so much more. 15 years later, Bill writes the 12 and 12, and he's got a whole chapter to both of these things outlined, and they're good chapters too. They really are. They're good chapters. I mean, remember in the big book, they said, listen, this is all about you just quitting drinking. Well, we all know later that's not what this is about. This is about a lifestyle. This is about changing our perspectives. But you know what, in 1935 or 1939, it was, we just don't want to get stupid drunk anymore. And that's what they did, and they were successful. So this book is invaluable for that. But there's other resources out there. 12 and 12 is just one of them. Drop the Rock is another one. Ripple Effect's another one. There's just so many things out there that, so much so that I'm standing up here thinking, I wished I could remember any of it at this point. And I would relate it back to you, and you'd say, man, he's pretty smart. Which wouldn't be right.
Excuse me.
I used to think I was smart. I'd been married 3 times. I've been convinced otherwise. Not by me, but, you know. So I really, truly don't want to miss something. I actually wrote some things down here today. There's some funny things in the big book, isn't there? I mean, it really is. If you read through this thing, sometimes there's some funny stuff. And I think this might be in the 12 of 12. It's Bill says, to those of us who have hitherto known only excitement, depression, or anxiety, in other words, to all of us, this now found a peace and an appreciative gift. I mean, this is a funny statement. It is all of us. All of us. You know, I'm astounded at that, how different and honestly how similar we all are in this regard. How we are going to make our way through this. Now, the task that I set before me now was to find humility. And so I'm on to step 7. I'm on my knees, literally, praying for willingness to let go of these things. To make my life, not to make my life better, that's not the right word, to make it more, to give it more contrast, give it more feeling, give it more light, give it more color, give it texture. Not just a better life, a life that's well lived, that's of value, not just for myself, but to others around me. And not in any kind of arrogant sense. What I mean is, can I help? Can I be of value? Can I? That's what I pray for. That's the normal prayer. Help me be of some value. Help me not to step in it, please. I do anyway, you know? And then I'm going, oh, crap. That's why that step 10 is there, by the way, and we'll get to that in a couple of weeks. Anyway, so here I am at 7. I think I have the willingness. I'm starting to grasp the concept of staying in this kind of powerlessness state and asking for humility and asking humbly to have them removed. Well, that seems easy enough. I think that I would warn. I'm just saying that you got to be careful what you pray for. My friend here, Eric, said he prayed for patience this morning, and that was a mistake. Because he got tested all day long. We know how that works, right? Oh God, please give me humility. Oh shit, man, here it comes. That's a runaway train that you've just asked to crash into your life and say, well. Here's all the humility gifts you want, Dave. But remember, you have to handle them with humility. Yeah. No. I quit actively praying for humility 25 years ago. I knew that I needed more honesty and humility in my life. But I didn't know if I was going to survive the test. I thought I might not survive this. But as it is, I did. So... But I'm working with the kind of diligence that I think I need, if only through prayer, trying to get to humility. Excuse me. You know, I've said this a long time. I got into this program, and I recognized right away that my program had to be built on 2 pillars. And I'm sure it's the same for lots of people. Humility and honesty. Now, it makes more sense if you had at least 3 pillars, right? But I don't. I only have 2. And here's the deal. I only had a nodding acquaintance. They say that, about humility, with one of them, and none of the other. And I will let you guess which one. Because here's it. I was not, personality, I am not driven towards humility. Sorry. I'm not, and I know that. And I work hard at not acting the way that I did as a drunken fool. But a lot of those things were the grosser handicaps that I did not have a handle on. I now think that I have a better handle on them. Does that mean I'm free of that? Nah, I don't think so. The nice thing about 6 and 7, regardless of it being this big gray chunk in the middle, I can keep coming back to it. I can keep clearing it up a little bit. I can keep trying to find myself a way of defining my life better. And through acceptance and through and just through continuous effort towards finding humility. Now, if you're humble, naturally, you don't know that, right? It's not something you talk about. I mean, you always, you know, you see these guys get interviewed after a spectacular effort in their field of sport, and they go, "Well, I'm pretty humble." No, you're not. And my very good friend Helen Schaefer, years ago, and I was new in the program, and I always loved this story, and she always says, "Why do you keep telling that story?" Because it still resonates with me. I was less than a year sober, and we were to Crossingville, Rifle Club down there, and it was a little stone building, and it was cold in July, but in January or February, it was horrible. So she asked me, I'm sitting there by myself, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm just sitting here being humble." And she said, "No, you're not." That resonated with me and reminded me again, and 30 some years later I still remember it, because it's important to remember that humility did not come to me without effort. Now, like I said, if you're humble, you don't know that. And we all know humble people, don't we? We really do. And you go like, "Oh God, I hate this guy. He's so humble. He's so lovable and kind, generous of spirit." Yeah, Kevin, I meant you. I don't dislike people that have humility. I really don't. I'm deeply, deeply jealous of them, because I know that they don't know. And what they give off and what they provide for me is something of substance that they don't know that they're giving to me. That they are modeling for me a life that I could live better by knowing people that have real, true humility. And honestly, there's not a lot of people that I know of in my life that have had that. But those who have been wonderful. I'm sorry, I'm running out of gas. I'm sorry. Anyway, I promise that I will come back from Vermont better. At least I hope so. Because I won't be here next week, and I'm sorry to miss it, but I told Kevin that if he wanted me, he'd had to put up with my vacation schedule. That's all there was to it. Thank you, folks. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Listen, do yourself a favor. Go ahead and read the placard that Bob had on his desk. Go ahead and find that and read that, and you think, "Oh, okay, so this really was a pretty good dude. This is somebody who actually lived this life. I mean, that's what he had." And thank God for him. And thank God for Bill and the rest of you. I want to just paraphrase something. Everybody watched the Band of Brothers in Major Winners at the end of it. And they're doing the interviews with those guys. And Major Winners, they ask him, and he said, "Grandpa, were you a hero in the war?" And Grandpa said, "No, but I served with the company of heroes." So was I a miracle in this room? No. But I've been in a whole room full of miracles. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
I hope. Sorry about the coughing. I do appreciate it.
So now, if anybody has any questions for Dave that he can answer quickly and shortly without having to talk and cough, we'll take some questions now.
Thanks, Dave. Renee, alcoholic. I'm curious. I mean, obviously, there's a direct correlation between your relationship with your higher power in step 6 and 7.
Yep.
But as you went along and you were doing your following steps, did you find that you were able to be more willing and more humble the more 12th step work you did?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The more I learned about this, and by the way, the best way to learn about this is to actually do it. If you have the willingness and obviously the opportunity, I always tell people, you know, this program doesn't operate by itself. It doesn't operate in a vacuum. It operates because we reach out our hand to each other. And so I have learned more about the program, obviously, from the people that I've sponsored than I've ever learned by reading a book, ever. And those conversations back and forth have reminded me time and time again how important it was to pass it on. So, yeah, thanks for the question.
Who else has a question?
Paige Alcoholic, when you're working with the sponsees on step 6 and 7,
yep,
do you spend much time talking about their positive attributes so they don't get too down on themselves?
I think that's always part of the conversations, Paige. I never want to punish people. That's what we're here for. Some people want to punish themselves, and then you try to redirect that. But I've never once, you know, people talk about, make sure you write something good about yourself in your fifth step and or your fourth step. And I've never done that. I've never said do that. Because the conversations I'm going to have with you in the fifth step are going to be positive. You know, obviously we're going to talk about your gross or handicaps, but we're also going to talk about the things that you did to get here. By the way, you're an AA program and you're doing the fifth step. That's a big deal. So yeah, I don't spend much time. I don't think about it. We just do it anyway.
Who else has a question? And if you're on Zoom and have a question, just go ahead and speak up when you get the chance.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for struggling through with the voice situation.
Yeah, thank you for putting up with it.
Here we are. But, you know, the seven-step prayer talks about removing, being willing, you know, and letting God remove defects that get in the way of my usefulness to Him.
Yes.
And
others.
I was, you know, you kind of touched on that about being of use, being of service, mm-hmm. and also about, I guess, the opposite of being selfish and self-centered and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But have you, you know, there's a lot of things we call defects. And there's, you know, sometimes they boil down to the same two things.
Yes.
You know, like you said, ego and self-centeredness and fear.
Right.
And I guess the real question underneath, after all this speechifying, is this. We hear a lot about, I'm working on this defect, and it seems to me the step says, humbly ask God to remove that defect.
Yeah.
So what's my work there in that scenario?
Here's my answer to it, and I don't want to sound flippant at all, is that obviously, you're not working on it at all if you keep having it. You're working on the idea of, in my case, what I would say to that is that I am returning to a behavior that is not in my best interest. I'm not really working at it. I'm trying to find a way to keep it and still have the benefit of the program. So, yeah.
I have one other question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it. You know, as time has gone on, have you discovered more? Has more been revealed? You know, like early on, it's sometimes, I know some of the things I thought were defects are kind of trivial.
Oh, you know, gosh,
I get impatient in traffic.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. So as time has gone on, can you share some of your experience as time has gone on? What, you know, without, you know, upsetting detail, but how has more been revealed to you, and how has you know, just staying sober and keeping at the program helped you recognize more and then be more open to working and letting go of that?
Well, okay, that's a lot of question.
I know, but
and I appreciate it,
I can't
Leslie.
Think of any other
no,
way to say it though.
That's fine. I get what you're saying, and thank you very much. I had a sponsor tell me one time that if I killed myself in the first 5 years, I killed the wrong guy. And I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I do now. I know that everything that I set out for myself in the first 5 years of the program was what I was going to camp on in the sixth year. I would have shortchanged myself. Same thing goes with my character defects. I had an exaggerated sense of who I was. That's a nice way of saying I was, you know, completely over at the top of my head about how wonderful I was. Now, like most drunks, I was a self-loathing narcissist. You know, I didn't like myself too much, but listen, I'm all I think about, right? So it wasn't unusual for me to have a day where I thought I was doing pretty good, and somebody come up to me, because I was open to it, and say, you know, you're a little bit loud, you're a little bit over the top, you're making I wouldn't say you're making a fool of yourself because you're too kind, but those are the kind of things. Now, those are not necessarily minor, but they're really correctable. And I worried way too much about that, and not enough about how I was gaining trust in a power greater than myself, how I was getting to be a better human being as a direct result of my attendance at Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps. So that's the best I can answer that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Who else has a question? Dave. Hi, Doug Alcoholic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave, for your presentation tonight. Could you just talk for a minute about what you do on a daily basis to be right-sized, which seems like that's kind of the hope, the place that we're trying to reach with these steps?
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. Thank you for the question. Upon arising in the morning, I try to make sure that I'm going to be okay and get up and breathe, and after that, it's a matter of prayer and meditation. I don't have six books that I read. I don't. There are times that I've settled into reading things and then I get away from it. But I never get away from the idea that the very first thing that I'm going to do in the morning, or pretty close to the very first thing, is to pray. Is to say, listen, I can't do this by myself. And my prayers are pretty simple, I got to be honest with you. I'm not asking, I don't know enough to ask for anything except please help me. And help me to do others well. Let me be of some value. Help me not to get in the way of somebody else who is trying to, you know, because talk about an ego issue. If somebody's doing real well, you want to get in on that side, right? Say, well, I was there too, remember? So those are the things. And legitimately, I spend the day making sure that I check myself. Not always. If I get too much caffeine, I'm an idiot. I don't know how many times. I when I worked, you know, I used to drink a lot more caffeine than I do now. And in the afternoon meetings, I would be buzzing with too much caffeine. And I already had a problem of talking too much. And now I'm going at 100 miles an hour. And I'm the boss, so they can't tell me to shut up. But they did, eventually. Or they said things like, oh, I think you have a little bit too much caffeine, Dave. You know. So I wasn't prayerfully engaged at that point. Best I can do, Doug.
Hi, I'm Pat. I'm an alcoholic. I am really enjoying your self-scorching transparency. This is great.
Well, thank you.
It's almost always better to watch someone else do that, by the way. And the
thank you.
Your comments earlier around Leslie's question, at the risk of overkilling it, I want to go a little bit deeper with you if I can. And maybe you can or maybe you can't answer this. So you said, you know, you'd get these times when somebody, perhaps well-meaning, would critique you and
yes.
say, you know, you talk too much, you did this.
Yes.
Can you recall a time where, in contrast to how you might have handled that situation, after you'd grown and matured, and where you did handle that situation positively, just kind of expound on that?
Sure, absolutely. I'd love to give you a lot of graphic examples. I'm not going to, but there was one. I got to tell you this. We were at a Christmas party, and I had too much caffeine. And there's 100-some people that I worked with. And I had the microphone. And I thought I was funny. And by the way, I was. But they didn't appreciate me in the same way that you folks appreciate me. And here's what happened. After I'm done, the two people that were my closest associates there were the assistant directors. And they got me aside and said, "Listen, Dave, you might have gone too far on a couple of those things." Thinking, what are you talking about? I was completely baffled. I was also about 25 years sober. And I'm thinking, I don't know what you're talking about. So when they explained it to me, I went, "Oh, for the love of God." So now I'm writing out a memo to everybody that I work with, asking forgiveness if I had somehow offended them. And I was legitimately concerned now that I had done that. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to save face. I wanted to do it because this program tells me to do that. Make the amend. If I had done it right, I would have done it before I left the podium that day, but I didn't know I was doing bad. So those are the kind of things. Excuse me. I had a guy in the program one time, and I didn't like him, and he probably didn't like me. And we were in a meeting, and it was a discussion meeting, and I don't know how long ago, a long time ago, and I didn't introduce myself, which we're not required to do. Nobody says you have to say your name and you're an alcoholic. You're here because you have a desire to quit drinking. But that's what we do here, right? "Hi, I'm Dave and I'm an alcoholic." I didn't do it. I've been sober for a while. This guy had been sober a minute. And he said, "Who are you?" Oh. I don't like that when people do that anyway. I think it's rude, really. Don't make people do that. Don't embarrass people. People would rather be hit in the stomach than embarrassed. Me included. So I immediately said things that I shouldn't have said. I didn't curse. I was sharp and rude. And then talked about forgiveness in my comment and what a wonderful guy I was. And now it's early in the meeting and everybody's looking at me like, "Wow, we didn't know this guy possessed that kind of enmity." And so I couldn't let that slide because my program said I made that mistake then. If I know about it, then I need to make it right now. So I double dipped, you know, it got around and I was legitimately sorry that I had done that. So contrasting, this is Dave being what he used to be all the time against this program actually works. Now, do I want to do that first thing again? No. Am I going to? Yeah, I did it like, you know, 2 years ago at Chipotle. Chipotle of all places. So I give this kid some crap, but who knows? It's not his fault. I'm having a bad day. I don't know what's wrong with me. I go out, it's pandemic time, and my wife said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, I just made a horse's ass myself." She said, "What are you going to do?" I'm going to go right back in there and tell that kid I'm sorry. In front of all the people I had embarrassed in front of. That's what this program's done for me. It didn't make me the nicest guy in the world. I still have triggers. I still make mistakes. But man, I will immediately make it right if I can. And sometimes I can't. Some people just tell you to go, you know, low. Wait, I don't want to hear it. I don't blame them. That's on me. But I'm going to make the effort because this program told me to make that effort. So, yeah, that's acceptance. That's a willingness. It's almost humility. I won't say it is because then you'll say, "See, you missed it again." Thank you for the question.
Anyone else have a question for Dave?
Well, if not, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Dave.
Anyone else have a question?
Okay, well, I'm not that disappointed then.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. See you in a couple weeks.
You know, you could always zoom in.
Yeah.
No, I'm not zooming in.